Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have got the super beautiful and talented Lara Arden with me. Now, Lara's, I'm going to read this because I absolutely love it. When she's not coaching clients to their award-winning success or being an ambassador of appreciation, I absolutely love that. Lara likes doing commercial modeling and acting, doing gym workouts with friends, going to international West Coast swing dance competitions. We're going to have to cover this. Doing cruises. I love that you wrote doing cruises because you have to do a cruise.
You do.
Can't just go on a cruise. And holidays with family and friends. Welcome, Lara. We're going to learn so much more about you there. There's only a few words there, but there is so much more. That I know there's a lot more to you, girl. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Before we go anywhere, the West Coast swing dance competition. What's a West Coast swing dance?
Good question. So West Coast swing came from East Coast swing originally, or otherwise known as Lindy Hop. So if you think of like the 1920s, the big brass big brass jazz band era, and you'd have the girls in their flare skirts and their, you know, some of them be in their heels, but some of them be in their trainers, their sneakers, you know, and they'd be getting flipped over the guys' back, and you know, and then in the 50s it grew into like a bit of jive, and the guys would spread their legs and then they'd pull the girls underneath, and then they'd do what's called swing out, so they're dancing like together, and then all of a sudden she goes flying out to the side and comes back in, you know. So that sort of motion, that's called the swing, you know, like what she's like flying out on the swing and then coming back. And so that's East Coast swing or Lindy Hop, which is very athletic, very acrobatic, you know, because the girl can be flipped over the guy's back and pulled through his legs, you know, on the floor and all that sort of thing. And then as the music developed over the decades and progressed, and we got the introduction of, you know, jazz fusion and then rhythm and blues and then hip hop and then pop, and now we've got contemporary music. Lindy Hop or East Coast swing stayed back in that era of, you know, retro, where the guys wore the baggy pants and the braces, and the girls wore the pretty dresses, and they'd have their hair and the lipstick, the red lipstick, and and they just look fantastic out, you know, in the dance hall days, in their get up like that. Whereas for things like West Coast swing and then other, it's called Rock Modern Jive, you know, more modern dances, they progressed with the music and became more casual in the attire. So then you'd have the jeans, but, you know, the girls would have a nice top. And so then, you know, with the introduction of hip hop as well, you've got more, the sneakers are coming back again. And so, you know, dancers, like the guys and the girls, they're wearing sneakers and looking comfortable, still nice shirts, comfortable, like they move with the dancer, you know, but then maybe just some jeans or even like khaki canvas pants, that sort of thing. And and it's very modern, so it's all the stuff that you hear on the radio these days, the top 40, that's what they dance to for West Coast swing. And and I love it because the music changes all the time, so it's very modern.
I love watching all of that East Coast swing over the years, and I watched a movie the other day that was about, and it was just World War II London bombing and everything, and they went to an underground bar, and it was a lot of the American soldiers were there and doing the dance, and it was really cool. So that'd be really interesting though, putting that sort of thing, not as athletic as you said, to modern music. And
it's great, and because the West Coast swing is a lot calmer as a dance. It's not as athletic, but it's more like it looks like ice skating across the floor. It's very smooth, and because it looks so, it's sometimes the dancers look like they're doing moonwalks, you know, like it's got kind of that sort of very cool, very sort of sassy style to it. But you know, there's some great opportunities that followers or the ladies get to hijack moves and to, you know, break out and do things on their own that you don't necessarily get the chance to do those sorts of extra things that you might be inspired to do as a follower, you know, like for other dancers, whereas you do in West Coast Swing, because there's a lot more freedom in that opportunity to improv, because it's basically improv, it's freestyling.
Yeah, that's cool. And it says you go to it. You do it as well, I'm assuming.
I do it, yeah. And I go to dance conventions and international dance competitions. So I love to compete as well as dance. And if there's a group routine happening, then I love to perform as well. So,
okay. Yeah. So any award-winning dance things there that you haven't mentioned to me?
But it's interesting, like not to begin with. So I actually began dancing from the age of about 5 when I could first go along to my first ballet class. Right. And that was because mum was the local pianist and I was pigeon-toed actually at the time. So I had to start dancing to help me turn out. Yeah. And I was really excited to get into the world of ballet, and that progressed, and I continued and I did my exams, and then, you know, and then I wanted to do like modern jive and jazz dancing, and did a bit of character and Highland and tap dancing. So did all the like the ballet school things, and then by the time I was 10, I actually became a professional dancer.
got to do my
first ballet at the age of ripe old age of 10.
Wow.
And I was in the Queensland Ballet Company. They were on tour, so they were up in Townsville and they were doing Les Miserables, and I was one of the street urchin kids, and they painted, they put soot on me and had to wear the raggy clothes, and so there I was dancing around.
How exciting for a 10-year-old. That is amazing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. So I'm really grateful that I've had all those years of, you know, performing and dancing on stage. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I love about you, Janine, because of the experience that you have on the stage. You're also speaking for performing. And
certainly not dancing, Laura. I was the tomboy. I was the one out climbing the trees at 5-year-old, and then give me any sport. And
oh, wow. Good on you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's got to be someone special to be able to do both. I don't know that I was very good at the, you know, the racket and ball sports, although I don't mind a game of pickleball now, because that's a lot of, you know, hit and giggle.
Yeah.
I can manage that.
Yeah. I really honour anyone that can dance. And it wasn't until I started teaching aerobics that I really got good at listening to music and 4 beats and being able to do that. Right? And
very good.
Really paid attention to it before. I couldn't do it. And
good on you. That's awesome.
It was when I first started doing it. It wasn't that I'd learnt, you know, the anatomy, the physiology, and all of the other components. But then, right, how do we teach an aerobic class? Oh, there's actually beats in this music.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good learning. And now I can't do it wrong, you know. You can't.
Oh, wonderful. That's it. We learn by repetition.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Yeah. So you're asking about the competitions for the dancing for me. And so I'll just go back. So when I was doing all those exams and everything that I did, so I also managed to get into Stedford's and do competitions for the dancing as well. And I did about 7 years of that from the age of 10 to 17. And although I never got anywhere personally, like individually, I would always go and do a solo routine, you know, for either ballet or for jazz or for tap, and I never got anywhere. I would do well when I was in the group and compete, and then the group would win, you know, their categories as well. So that gave me a really good introduction to the world of competition dancing, and I loved it. I didn't care that I didn't win, because, you know, I was just happy out there, you know, being on stage and performing and just doing what I loved, like dancing to the music and moving. And so today I still continue to dance, and yes, I still continue to compete. I did get to win a dance competition, and that was for another dance style. That was for modern jive, Siroc, or sometimes it's called Latin American. It's kind of like dirty dancing. And I did get to win a trophy for that one. And that was back in, I think, 2010, a little while ago now. So it's time for me to get in and do some more competing, I think, for the West Coast Swing.
I compete at speech contests. So it's just, you know, and it's what I found. It's so what's the word? It's so qualitative. It's not a quantity. It's not a, you know, my favorite sport to watch is swimming. You touch the ball, you know who's won. You know, end of story. Yeah. Whereas any sort of performance, and also with your, you know, how you help people with their awards, it's so subjective. That's the word I'm looking for. It is so subjective, isn't it? It's how you might what you say or do or dance or how you perform, how that resonates with the person making the judgment call.
Yeah, definitely. And you know that there's a nice little, like I learned a little bit about myself recently, as to why a dancer has a different approach to business or to work compared to other people who've come, like, you know, from a sports background or a musical background. Like, it has its influence on how we think and how we function, you know, in certain roles of work they're doing. And interestingly, what I learned about a dancer is that, you know, they come from that methodical background where we learn by repetition. So it's a lot of rehearsal over and over and over until you get to the performance, you know, stage. But it's through all of that repetition and rehearsal that we learn how to identify the details, how to refine and polish things, you know, to get it to the final stage of performance or presentation or the show, you know, like the opening night.
Really interesting. Now now I want to question what comes first. Is it that dance attracts the person or and who is in that mindset?
Yeah.
Likes that I need to, or it's because you're doing it that you do it, or a bit of both.
Maybe.
I always like to look something from a different angle as well, as opposed to me that just goes, oh no, I can do it. Just go and do it.
Wow. Well, I love that confidence.
But whether I'm not a perfectionist under any strict stream. I like to do things well as I can, but just don't put any stress on it. Just
go
and try it. So yeah, that's an interesting observation.
Yeah, because we're all wired differently, we all think differently, and like we have our own lanes that we like to swim in, you know, as to how we're going to get to the other end, whether we go fast, like we might be a quick start, you know, whether we go slow, we might prefer stability or, you know, being smooth in the water, or it could just be that we just want to get there and we don't care what it looks like and it doesn't need any technique. it's just, I'm going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I'm on an eating plan and I see all these people preparing all these food things. And I was looking at, I was talking to my coach, as we're talking about coaches recently on another conversation. And she said, people are either foodies or they're there for fuel. And I said, I'm just there for fuel.
It's true.
It's me. But again, it's different. You know, just simple and easy as opposed to, but the steps. I love it. Now, getting to where you are now and doing what you do in business, can you just tell us, because your intro said you were an ambassador for appreciation, and I want to know more about that and then how that's led you into what you do.
Lovely, thank you. Well, you know, I think probably one of the things I realized growing up is that I didn't get many opportunities to be appreciated. As hard as I tried, you know, because I love dance, that was my passion, and I love to compete, but and although I did really well in my exams, like technically I was a great dancer and I'd always get honors or highly commended for my dances, for my exams, whether it was ballet, jazz, tap and all of that, and I went right through all my exams through the ballet school as well for years, but it was interesting to me that, you know, when it came to competing in the Estedfords, that that I wouldn't even get a place, not you know, definitely never got first or second, but didn't even get third, didn't even get highly commended. And, you know, and I competed and, you know, like I practiced and I always rehearsed because I wanted to make sure I, you know, put my best effort in and did my best performance, you know, when it was my turn. And, you know, I was just curious about that. And it's interesting how, you know, there was a lot of repetition, but also a lot of rejection because it really didn't amount to anything. So as much as I loved it, and when I was in the group and that amounted to something and we'd be recognized and appreciated and we'd, you know, come away with the trophy together, celebrate, I didn't get that for myself personally. And, you know, and I think because I didn't get that opportunity to be recognized, you know, sometimes when you don't have something, you really appreciate what it is to have something, you know what I mean? So coming from that perspective as a child, I learned, and I didn't want to consider that it was just, you know, oh, some people are luckier than others. That's why they win all the time. Like, I knew that there was something in that, that maybe they were doing better than I was. And so that seemed to sort of develop inside of me and curiosity, you know, an interest for, is there a better way of doing things, you know, where some things get a better result than, you know, than other things. And it was, I think, probably from that mindset that I continued to take with me then through my adult years, that, you know, when I came across my first situation in my sales career, and I was out in the field and I was selling life insurance, it was commission only. And,
I have a few of those commissioners. And what I want to note, everyone in their own business is on commission only, by the way.
That's, yes, exactly. Well said. It's true. Yes. Yeah. And at the time I also had, you know, young children in primary school and a big mortgage, you know, just bought a roof over our heads. And I remember, and I actually was working for Ansett before I got that commission only job until they went belly up. And so then I was like, oh, I've got to get something, anything. So I said yes to commission only. And I went and worked for this insurance company, and it was painful. I can remember the first few weeks, you know, I was trying to, like, they had these scripts and I didn't really get that. And I was just trying to be with people when I was in front of them and talking to them about the insurance. So I was just trying to build their relationships. But again, I noticed that other people, like my peers, like, they were doing really well. They'd be making lots of sales. And I'd be like, well, I'm out there and I'm seeing the people. So I'm putting in the effort. I've got the activities. And I'm like, I'm doing the activities. I've got the right attitude. I have to do well in this. Like, what am I missing? What am I not doing? And that's where this curiosity, this mindset that made me want to think there is obviously a better way of doing this, made me, after the tears that I had, you know, as I can remember, as you do, I can remember one day I pulled over on the side of the road. I think that was like the fifth rejection in a row. And and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was out in the middle of Kalgoorlie, and because I'd had to drive 12 hours to get to this country town as well to make these sales. And so there I was. It was a Tuesday afternoon, 2:30 in the afternoon, 5 rejections, and sitting in the car on the side of the road thinking, oh my God, I have to figure this out, because, like, I've got that big mortgage and, you know, I've only got 1 week here in Kalgoorlie. How do I get this? I've only got 2 days left to go. And I'm like, help, please. The tears streaming down my face. And I remember at that point thinking, you know what, I'm just going to take a break. I'm just going to go back to, like, the little caravan park unit we were staying in. There was a group of us that went out for the week, and I just went and had some lunch, and I just let myself breathe. And when I was quiet and calm, I pulled out the manual, the sales manual that they had, and I started having a read through the scripts, and I found the thing that I think that I'd been missing. And I realized, oh my gosh, I haven't been talking about other people who, you know, in the neighborhood who've also bought this insurance policy, people that these other people I'm going to see would likely know. Mm. And it's called, like, a third party referral validation. When you mention someone else, validation, yeah. And so I thought, okay, well, I've still got, 2 more appointments for today. I can go and see those people. I thought, I'm going to do that extra thing I've been missing. And it was amazing that it actually worked. And then I continued to apply that. And incredibly, I started having success, and I was, you know, making these sales. And then, so we learn by repetition, right? So I just kept doing what worked. And then within about 18 months, I ended up breaking the company's 50-year-old sales record. There was an annual sales competition.
Wow, congratulations with that. That's
thank
awesome.
You. Yeah. Yeah, 600 national sales agents, 1 week to compete to make as many sales as we could for, you know, the maximum number of policies, so volume sales. And and I ended up, I didn't know it at the time, but I found out later that I ended up breaking this 50-year-old company record with the volume of sales I produced. And it's only because I had found what worked. You know, I found that edge, that strategy of what it takes to be more than good, but to be really, really great at, you know, what I was doing. And And then interestingly, I applied the same strategy when I went to uni. I was a mature age student and I didn't get to finish high school. So I didn't get to learn like the techniques of, you know, creative writing, you know, or assignment writing or exam preparation and all of that, because I left halfway through year 11 and went out to work. But there I was. I'd always wanted to go to uni, and I think I was about 48 and decided I'm going to do it. So I signed up for a psychology and counselling degree. And, yeah, first semester in, you know, like I was full-time, so I did a couple of units and I just passed, and I'm like, oh, my God, this isn't great, because I know I'm really good but I don't know what I'm doing here, so I'm out of my depth. I've got to figure out something quick. And I ended up going in buying or borrowing all the books that I could learn about how to do academic writing and how to prepare for exams and things like that. And so I taught myself how to be a master student and, yeah, and how to get through university. And I did that in the school holidays. And I applied myself, went back, and, yeah, because I'd learned that there is a difference between good and great, and I'd found out what that edge was, and I was able to do that. And then, you know, the next semester, I was just getting all HDs, high distinctions, and ended up getting to the end of my degree. And I had, you know, this award that I had received as well from the Vice-Chancellor, top 100 of 29,000 students, and I was like, wow, amazing. You know, so again, not something I set out to do, just always wanting to, you know, refine and polish and look for what's the best, you know, the like what's the edge here that can make it really great.
And that's the thing with awards and what you're doing with your business now, isn't it? There's a lot of people enter awards.
Yeah.
We'll turn that off.
There are a lot of people who enter awards. And so it is a style of a competition, you know, where contestants are having their, you know, their entries that are being read by a panel of judges. And it's very similar in that, you know, like whatever it is that they've written or that they've prepared and put together to present to the panel of judges, ideally it's going to be the best version of whatever it is that they want to share and say about themselves, their performance, their people, projects, products, whatever it is that they want to showcase in their business. And you know, the better we can you know, polish what it is that we want to say and refine that as well, so it gets really clear and we can say it in as few words as possible, then the more powerful it can be, you know. And it's those sorts of distinctions and qualities that can really set an entry apart from others and take it from being good to great, that becomes a standout to the judges and allows them to see, ah, there's a finalist, there's a winner. You know, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah. No, and that is so important. I love we both are together on a conversation group called the Morning Tea Marketing Misses, and I love and Lara has just come on in the last couple of months, and for somebody else that's had to leave. And what I love about you is the coming in from that different space, like a curious space with a particular topic, or just do it thinking something a little bit different than what we were talking about, and bringing it in and then challenging. And I can see that as being part of what you do when you know, helping people write their applications or you, yeah. Because what's the process with that? Do you write it for them, or they give you a whole lot of information and you make it all pretty?
Yeah, good question. It can go either way. Okay, it depends on what's going on in the nominee's or the business owner's life and how they want to approach it as well. Ideally, I like to upskill people, because I appreciate the value of them being able to know how to do something and to do it for themselves, because I like the idea of being self-sufficient. So I do like to, you know, invoke and pass on that transfer of knowledge so that others can learn to do it too, because it's such a valuable skill when we know how to articulate and how to look for the good in something and to be able to write about it and write about it well. You know, we can use that everywhere in our business, you know, even just for a simple email.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And it's one of those skills that I value a lot and have got a lot better at over the years. And one of the ways I've got better at it is helping other people write their stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's harder to do it for yourself. This is why you need someone to do it for you. It's really hard to do it for yourself. And
you're right.
And to write, use, and to honor yourself enough. And as you said, you know, show that appreciation for who you are and what you've achieved.
Yeah, definitely. Self-recognition. It's like a pat on the back. Mm. And, you know, that can be something that's not easy for people to do, especially in our Australian and New Zealand culture. Like, we've got something called tall poppy syndrome here, you know, that a lot of us are at the effect of. I know it happens in Canada, in Western Europe too. And so tall poppy syndrome is pretty much where people feel afraid of putting themselves forward. Because they're worried about the ramifications of what's so and so going to think of me, and how will I get judged, you know, if I look like I'm better than someone else. And you know, that can create a bit of anxiety for people not wanting to put themselves forward. But you know, in truth, it takes courage, you know, to put ourselves forward for things. But at the same time, if you've done a great job, or if your people have done a fantastic job, and you want the team, you know, or the project, the product, whatever it is, the program that you've got, if you want it to be acknowledged and appreciated, you know, we need to be able to document that and write about it and reference it and, you know, talk about it and share it, because it's when we can, you know, pass these stories on to others, that's when it gets to be acknowledged and recognized and heard about for good. And, you know, the more that we can get better at being able to tell our own stories, which is pretty much what it is, and we're doing our Business Awards nomination, you know, then the more effective it's going to be, that those accolades and that external recognition and appreciation will come back to us. So, yeah.
No, definitely. And it's not something that people stop and do very often. You know, that's, and I think what I know for myself is when I've completed award nominations, is it's given me more insight into my business.
Yes. Can I ask you, Janine, would you be willing to share with us maybe something that you noticed that you didn't see before after you'd done a Business Awards nomination?
Well, one of the things a couple of years ago, I was challenged by an outside coach to put more systems in place in the business.
Okay.
So over time, I have been doing exactly that. And I won Logan City Chamber of Commerce Small Business Award last year.
Wow.
Business to business. Yeah, thank you. But it was all about how can I not be in the business? Because as a sole trader, you are the business.
You
so
are.
What would happen and what strategies are there in place to overcome that? And because I'd put these systems in place, because I had to evaluate, I was able to go back through during the awards and go, oh yeah, that system's there, and that system's there, and that system's there. And then obviously that's what engaged the judges, because they were already, it was recognition of what was needed, and it was already in place.
Beautiful.
Yeah. But it also made me go, oh yeah, I've done all that.
Wonderful. And I can hear that it gave you the opportunity to acknowledge and to give an accountability, you know, for the things that you learned that could improve your business and could make it easier for you to be in business as well, having those systems. So you got to apply what you'd learned. You got to be acknowledged for the things that you had implemented, but you also got to account for it as well. You're able to look back and see where it had made a difference. So I'm going to ask you, where can you share that it had made a difference for you?
Time. That's an easy one, Lara.
Okay.
I think that when we're a sole trader, we're always short of time. And putting on a work with a virtual assistant, which is something that I had, you know, meant to get around to, but actually creating systems for her before I put her on, and I was able to hand things over to her, and then have the trust in that she would achieve the outcomes that I wanted. I think that was, but all of those systemizing things, and I've just changed to a new CRM as well, which is going to cover a whole lot of things that I spend money on different platforms at the moment. So it's one platform instead. So it will save money and time.
Bring it all together. Beautiful. That sounds good. And another thing I'm curious about is that you mentioned that you won last year, and we were in another conversation recently, and I think, did you share that you've applied for, was it the same award again this year?
It is, yes, yes. And I went back through, and there's not a lot that's changed, but there's things that were added. Oh, yeah, I'm doing that as well. Things I'd forgotten about from last time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that. Was that kind of like a review that you got to do?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So reviewing things and then realizing that, okay, so working with AI more, which then it saves time, or the new CRM and different processes, particularly along the, how can you set things up so they're automated?
Nice. And so I'm curious to know as well.
I'm meant to be interviewing you, Lara.
Yeah, I know. You can ask me some more questions. I like to learn from others as well, right?
It's good because what it's doing is demonstrating the benefits of actually entering awards, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
It's what are you going to ask?
When can I ask you when you found out that you were a finalist? And then, you know, what can you talk us through what was, because some people haven't even applied for awards before, and so they don't even know what's the process, let alone, you know, putting in a nomination, what happens next after that? Could you talk us through?
So a lot of the time you either nominate yourself or you get nominated by somebody else, and then you get notification from whatever the group is. And I believe we're both finalists with the BX Awards at the moment as well.
We are. Exciting. High five.
And so, you know, I've been a finalist with the BX ones for 4 years. And I haven't won an award with them, but what someone reminded me last year is there's about, across all of the categories, there's about 1,000 finalists out of 20,000 applications.
Yeah.
You know, so recognizing that being a finalist is a very big deal. And when it came to the Logan Chamber of Commerce, then when I was a finalist, because it wasn't small business, it was just business to business. And I've gone, okay, that, like, wow, finalist in that, that's amazing, because it could be any size business. And then they announced that because they received an application that was so good that couldn't, though, compete with bigger businesses, they opened two categories, and they had small business and larger businesses. And then small business one. So that was, I was dumbfounded. I was at a table with a lot of the sponsors, and I'm sitting there, and it's, what? that was a real surprise. Because just being a finalist was a big deal for that one. So
That's incredible.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And can I ask, how did it? Like, is there anything that went through your mind whilst you were going through the process of actually putting together a nomination? And then when you found out that you had been selected as a finalist, like, how did that make you feel? What was the effort to reward like for you? Did that pay off?
Unlike you, who's methodical, I tend to jump into things and just do it without a lot of thought. And what I made sure I did with this particular nomination was put a lot of time into it. Not a lot of time, a lot of thought into it, and the time, allocated the time. And that's what I would encourage people to make sure they do with anything like that is take the time to do it. Don't do it as I've got to get that done, and then rush to do it, and get someone like yourself to, if you haven't done anything like that. I mean, I put words together, so hopefully that helps as well. But if you're not doing that, then it's, you know, you need to get the assistance to do it. And it is it, and you know, it, just entering, there's opportunities everywhere, all different sorts of places that has, and there's a lot out at the moment, different award, must be the award season. And just do it, because it really gives yourself that encouragement that you're doing something well. You know, that's I think the big, the big deal with that. When I asked you to put together, you know, some ideas about what you do and how you do it, I love what you do this because when I ask for my guests to give their why, and you gave me three whys, which was, and it was all beautifully written, and that was one of the things I've just maybe jumped to that as well, is because of how well that is written. And there was a big old altruistic why and a big selfish why and a big intrinsic why. Do you want to expand on those, Lara? But I mean, that's the whole reason we're in doing stuff, what we're doing, isn't it? There's whys behind it.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. So, and that's also important for us to remember when it comes to doing our business awards nominations as well, is that judges are looking for more than just the what it is that you do or how great it is. They definitely want to know that there's something that makes it award worthy, but they're also interested in why. Why does your business exist? And so for me, that's the altruistic why. And I had the opportunity to do some brainstorming and thinking and some crafting, you know, to really wonder about that as well recently. But it also is, you know, where it comes from is our vision, right? When we see that there is a place in the world for us, that our business exists for significant purpose and reason, then that can be the basis of your altruistic why. So for me, my big altruistic why for Business Awards Coach is that it exists because it's a catalyst for personal and professional recognition on a global stage.
Okay.
And yeah, so for me, that's one of the ways that I kind of claim a point of difference where I stand out from other business awards coaches or even business awards writer is that I'm looking for what is the personal strengths that you're bringing to your professional line of work, you know, because we're more than just our business, you know, we are the person that's driving it as well. And for me, I've been a judge on the Stevie International Awards just this year. And so I can share with you that as a judge, something that I'm looking for is, you know, what are the personal qualities that you bring to the business that make your business stand out and, you know, worth recognizing on a global stage? Because that's, I want to know about the humans involved in the work, mm-hmm. whether it's the business owner or the executives or the team. You know, like, tell me about the people that are involved because I'm a person and I want to hear about other people. Yeah, it's more than just the numbers and, mm-hmm. you know, the things that are being made. Like, it's all of that as well, you know, the production. But we also want to know the human stories, you know, like, where do people come from? Why do they do what they do? Why did they think that there was a need for that thing that wasn't there before but now it exists, you know? And so that's like the big altruistic why of the reason why things exist and the difference they're making in the world. Mm-hmm. So then my big selfish why that I shared with you is that my business allows me as an individual, as a person, to create an enduring legacy that supports and elevates the accomplishments of others. So it's kind of a little bit altruistic again, but it's more selfish because it gives me the opportunity to know that I'm here for a good reason. You know, that I'm making a difference in the world, that, you know, this business could only be done by me because of the motivations and the enthusiasms and, you know, the desire I have to want to be a cheerleader out there for other people. You got this, you can do it, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's where I get to feel my joy and I get to be fulfilled in being the business awards coach that I am and what I get to do. So that's my big selfish why. Mm. And then the last one that I was able to come up with is the big intrinsic why. And the big intrinsic why is something that's deeper and more personal again. And it's something that comes actually from our values, from our core values. And for me, I have written it like this. I'm going to read it for you. My big intrinsic why. Business Awards Coach allows Lara to feel a deep sense of purpose and satisfaction, knowing that she is the architect of her own contentment and success. She loves seeing others achieve this skill for themselves as well.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And that's the Simon Sinek with, you know, people haven't seen him on a TED Talk, make sure that you do. And he talks about why. And so just don't bother reading his book. It's boring. It's it's beyond boring. It's really hard to, it's hard to pick up, let alone put down. Very quick to put down. And sorry, Simon, but your TED Talks are phenomenal.
They're fantastic.
But it's important, and anyone in business just figuring out their why, you know. Yeah. And I think, and I want you to share on this, if you've got a big enough why, then that imposter syndrome, that sense that we're not good enough,
yes,
it's eliminated, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it definitely gets reduced. There's other things, little tools and tactics we can use to help put those little voices to rest and quiet them down so we can get through what we got to do. Mm-hmm. We can also destroy them as well as ways of taking them out. We can do that too. And you're right. It was Viktor Frankl, you know, who talked about psychotherapists, who talked about when we have, you know, a really strong why, we can bear almost any how. And he came up with that statement, or that claim, if you like, when he was going through the prisoner of war camps in the Second World War, you know, as a Jew. And, you know, his hope actually was looking forward to the time that he was going to be released, and he could see himself moving from Germany to go and live in America and to continue to do his teachings in psychology there, and that he would be with his wife, the love of his life. And although he didn't know that she had perished during the war and she didn't make it out of the prisoner of war camps, he still had that hope of being with her. And so that kept him alive, and he was able to survive starvation and all sorts of you know, atrocities that happened for him and his people in that time. And it was because he was holding on to the why, what life is for, what he's looking forward to. That's why I can bear this, you know, this how that I've got to go through. And it's the same for us. We can apply those tools and strategies to help us, you know, get through the how. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but it doesn't matter. We'll get there.
And looking at that, then, the when you've got the why and you're working towards something, because that's, you know, you basically have to do it. You know, it's no, you can't not do it.
Yeah.
But when challenges arise,
yeah,
as they do,
they do,
then you can I suppose the brilliance then is recognizing that you have a choice of how you respond to them. Because
always,
you've got the why there behind you. So what you were saying with Viktor Frankl is he's one thing is to have the why, but then all these sick challenges, that makes that insignificant, but term for what they Jews went through in World War II. But that is then, how do I respond to it?
Yeah,
making
that's it.
Choice.
Exactly. Yeah. So you mentioned imposter syndrome before, and you know, the imposter syndrome is something that can get in the way as a little bit of a challenge or an obstacle when it, because it's one thing to say, yes, I'm going to do this. This is why I want to do it, is because I want to have that, you know, that, that recognition. I want to be acknowledged. I want to be able to also have that badge and use it in my marketing. And I hope you've got your finalist badge on your email signature as well. And
I've got 2023. No, not on the email signature. No, on my website.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. It throws up images too big. So if I email it out, it would be too big an image. The way it just won't make it smaller, even the thumbnail. So yes, it's not there.
We'll have to find a way that we can reduce it for you so that you can put it on your email.
Yes,
it's definitely worth sharing. We're going to do that. we'll work on that for you.
I'll probably make a thumbnail. I'll try that again, but I haven't got. Yeah.
That's okay. We'll get.
But
to
it's
that
on the website. It's on the front page of the website.
That's it. So with the, just going back to the imposter syndrome for a second, and you know, it can be something that a little bit like the tall poppy syndrome, it gets in the way, you know, and it could be something where, like, well, with just the tall poppy syndrome for a moment, you know, that's where there's other people external that are not wanting us to succeed. So the imposter syndrome is an internal thing where we can think ourselves, oh, I don't deserve to succeed, you know. And it's interesting, you know, like there is this phenomenon psychologically, that then it all comes down to motivation, that once we start something, just like, you know, the New Year's gym membership that we sign up for, the first 2 weeks we're really motivated, but then after the first 2 weeks we hit this wall of resistance, and it's really hard to push through that and keep going, you know, and achieve the goals that we want to do. Well, similar things can happen when it's, you know, doing something that we're new at doing, you know, when it comes to applying for a business award, because, you know, we've got something at stake here. We really want to do this. We know why we want to do it. And, you know, it might be fine initially. We've got the motivation and the enthusiasm. But, you know, like, what about if that imposter wall just sort of gets thrown in there and it starts saying, you know, little things like, oh, you know, you can't write, you know, or you don't know what to talk about, you know, like, oh, don't think that, you know, that you've had anything outstanding, you know, or any sort of significant achievements that you could talk about, because who are you? You know, you're just a small business, you know, or you're not even aware of what's going on in your business because everyone else does it for you. Like, there's that comes up as well for some people. You know, so it's all these little objections, you know, that sort of come up for us mentally or even emotionally, but you know, they're just like those bricks in that wall of resistance, and we can find ways of being able to either go over the wall, you know, or we can go around it, or we can actually just smash the wall and obliterate it. There's different ways of dealing with that. And what I wanted to just add to that and share with you as well, Janine, is that, you know, it's important to remember that imposter syndrome is actually very common. All right. It's something that most people go through at some point, where they feel a little bit nervous or a little bit scared of, can I take this next step forward? But we do manage, we all find ways of being able to push through, you know, or even just to let that resistance just melt away as well. And then it's not a push, it's just, I'm just going to glide through this. Yeah.
And it glides much easier. And trust me, for anyone who's listening, as you mature, you lose a lot of that care factor.
Yes, that's it, that resistance. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah. It. It's just owning and being, allowing yourself to own and recognize who you are. Yeah. I you done anything much with love languages at all?
Yeah, Gary Chapman, the five love languages. Yeah, yeah,
What's your primary love language?
Oh, good question. Look, I've done his quiz over the years at different times, like when I've been on my own, and also when I've been in a partnership, for like a romantic relationship. And it's interesting that at the moment it seems to be touch. All right. And I just think, oh, I wonder if that's because, you know, my partner, he loves to hold hands a lot whenever we're out together. And I love that, you know, he's very big on PDAs, public displays of affections. and that makes me feel really, you know, really good inside. Yeah. So I love that. And then, you know, he loves to cuddle me on the couch when we get together and we're watching movies and stuff. So I really appreciate that. So I don't know, like, maybe is it because I'm being influenced by him that, you know, that the love language of touch is high for me at the moment. You know, I've also done the quiz at times and found that it's words that is of high value for me. And, you know, like, maybe that's because I do appreciate you know, kindness, you know, when people can just say something nice.
That's why I asked the question, because of that, you know, ambassador for appreciation. And yeah. You know, you're demonstrating your love by giving those words of appreciation, because recognizing that, you know, it was important.
Yeah.
You don't get it. It's interesting, it's mine as well. Words of appreciation, but I'm just in my own head going, oh, you've got it, girl, don't worry about it.
Isn't it interesting how sometimes being kind to ourselves can be like a difficult thing to do, and it shouldn't be, and yet it's almost as though, you know, like, there's that wall of resistance. Oh, I don't know if I can be kind to myself. It's almost like it takes courage for us to go, you know what, what's on the other side of that wall is an award, you know, becoming a finalist. You deserve that. Like, you've worked hard for everything that you do. Like, why do you think that you don't deserve that? Like, that should be the why.
Definitely. Yeah. It's interesting. When I was in the GM role, I was doing it for 20 years, and I think three times in that 20 years I walked into the owner's office and I just tell me I'm doing a good job. Just three times in 20 years. It's all I needed. I knew I was doing a good job, but Sometimes you need that outside validation, and that's what actually an award is. It's that outside validation, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's external validation. And, like it can be great for us personally, emotionally, and mentally. And also, it can be great for the business as well, because it gives the business that external validation and credibility. And we are influenced by that, like when you go out to see a movie, and, if you can see it's won these awards, that might be something you'll think, oh, I definitely want to see that one, while it's out there. We get influenced by food, if we can see, or coffee, if we can see that it's drinks that are award-winning,
Bottles of
it's
wine that have got all those gold labels on them from when they've won the awards. You know,
there you
you'll
go.
pay more for things. And that's an important factor, isn't it, with working with people? People are prepared to pay more for people that they know that, well, they've won an award, so they must be able to, know what they're doing. That's a factor. And the other part I always talk about that on that same thing is reviews, getting reviews, if other people are saying it, as you were saying, the third party validation. If other people are saying it, then they must be doing something right.
Absolutely.
So what do you see, other than the tall poppy and all that, as the biggest challenges for people not going for awards?
The biggest challenges that I, because I've actually got some market research that I'm doing on this at the moment, because I'm putting a book together about business awards, why they matter. And the market research that I'm doing is where I'm asking entrepreneurs to do a survey for me and to list what are the biggest challenges that they're facing. So I've been starting to get some answers and responses coming in from that. And it's interesting noticing that so far, some people want to know what is it that judges are really looking for, and that's understandable, because they want to know what's the criteria of, how I can make this better than good, how I want to make it great. But then it's also interesting noticing that there's mindset challenges in there, that some people are, I'm grateful for the honesty as well, and that they're sharing in the market research survey that they're obvious, they're genuinely being stuck by avoidance, or they've got the obstacle of procrastination. Like they want to go in the awards, they see the value of it, they know it would be good for themselves and business. But they're either avoiding it because they say, oh, I'm too busy, or perhaps I don't know what I'm doing. There's some confusion or overwhelm coming in, or it's the self-sabotage, procrastination, oh, I know it's important, but I've got all these other things to do. And maybe there's a secret wall of resistance. You don't really deserve this, like the little voices of hindrance that try to get in the way, that we need to find ways of being able to deal with those voices so that we can focus on moving and gliding through, so that we can get to where we actually want to be in becoming those finalists and those award winners, because we deserve that. The business deserves it as well.
No, definitely. And one of the topics I speak on all the time is branding and putting yourself out in front of your business and winning awards. I mean, the visibility and and we've talked a bit about the credibility is it really takes it to the next level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And the visibility is wonderful, because of the opportunities it brings for, greater networking as well, when you get to go to the gala ceremony events, and you're on the red carpet and can get your photos and it's beautiful dinners, and you're in those settings where everyone's dressing really well, and you're all sitting around the big tables, and you get to have some really key conversations with some, great people that you wouldn't ordinarily get to meet. So there's all those opportunities. And then when it comes to visibility, just because you're there and you're a finalist, you get to see your business name up on the screen as they're, going through naming the nominees and the finalists. And so again, there's that credibility, that opportunity for people to find out who you are, in a room full of hundreds of people. And
That's important. It just made me think, because the image that I have of winning that award is up on stage receiving the award, but behind the is a great big screen with the business name on it and the award winner. So
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
it's awesome. Lara, we could talk about this for ages. I am just what we always finish with three takeaways. So what out of everything we've discussed, what do you want people to definitely remember the most?
Thank you. I think just flowing on a little bit from those mindset challenges, recognizing that, when we say, yes, I want to do this, I want to apply for a business award, and I want to put myself out there and let the business be known, or myself, if you're representing the business, to recognize that there is going to be those mindset challenges come up, that wall of resistance is going to appear. And if it does, that, that's just like the voices of self-doubt, but that we can bowl it over, we can glide through it and keep going. So that would be the first one to just be aware of, and not let it stop you. And the second thing would be to appreciate that you deserve this, and so to understand that there is support out there, and that you don't have to do this on your own either. It doesn't have to be something that you leave it to the last minute either, where you think, oh, look, the deadline, I've got to have this done by midnight, and like it's 1 a.m. and you're still going, I'm gonna get this done. There's easier ways of doing it, and with support and mentorship, you can have these opportunities dealt with sooner rather than later, and then sitting there with your feet up on the desk, cheers, and having a toast because you hit submit and it was already 2 weeks or 4 weeks before the awards portal closed. So
Tends to be the way I work.
yeah, that's it. Organized, love it. Yeah, and then the last thing would just be to recognize that awards give us the opportunity to be recognized for our point of difference, for our diversity, and that's really empowering, whether it's for ourselves or the people that we're nominating or the projects that we're involved. It's really important that we let people know that we're here, we exist for good reasons, and we make a great difference in the world, and to be proud of that because you're worth it.
Excellent. And you certainly make a difference in the world, Lara.
Oh, thank you,
I
Janine, you too.
love learning so much more about you, with the dancing and the degree and the awards that you've won, and just who you are. It's one of the reasons I love having these conversations with people, and the value that you offer our listeners as well has been really appreciated. I want to thank you for that. How
Pleasure.
can people get in touch with you? It's probably the next most important question.
Okay, great. Yep, thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and what else is the best way to reach out to me, actually, is probably through LinkedIn, and then we can set a time to have to, time to come together and have a chat and just have a look at what they're where they're at in their business, what they're doing, and what they might be thinking of for applying for a business award. On that note, can I let you know I'm actually going to be starting the first of its kind, something new, where I would like to have an event where I have business owners come together, because something else I've been finding in the research is that people are finding it a little bit challenging going through the process of doing an awards nomination on their own. And it's good to know that we don't have to do it on our own. Yes, you can have support from myself and other mentors, and how great would it be that we can get together in a room, a bunch of business owners, where we're all working on our own awards, but we're doing it together,
I
and
love it.
we get to that final stage where we can cheers each other because we've hit submit and
Excellent.
it's
Another great
weeks early.
idea. Yeah, well done. So keep an eye out for that, hey?
We'll keep you posted.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you
Great.
again for sharing your expertise, Laura. I just love the conversation, and I look forward to, you helping and seeing you help other people win awards. And also good luck to both of us with everything that's coming up.
Yes. And I look forward to celebrating with you on Friday, the 2nd of August, down in Sydney at the Star Casino for the BX Final
That's right. I think I've
Gala
actually
Ceremony
got
Awards.
somebody that's booked some me to run some training, but I do have it in the diary. So I,
Very good.
yeah, we'll have to chat about that.
Yeah, let's do
Yeah, thank you.
it.
And that's another conversation with the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today with everyone that views these or listens to them through any of your channels. Remember, if you have got any questions, to go to JanineVosper.com, book a conversation, and we can, as I say each time, there's not something that I can assist you with. I have a lot of contacts and I know people, and they might be
Yes.
able to help you. Have a
Wonderful.
fantastic day, week, month, life. Enjoy. And remember to appreciate everything you've got. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.